topic that's been coming up lately, and I noticed, at least amongst high school boys, conveniently we have some, Chayiv Inish the Besume the Paraya Adelo Yada Ben Baruch Mordechai Lar Hama and vice versa. I'm just getting my thoughts. I'm collecting my thoughts. I have to thank Barry for suggesting we do Minyan de Yoma. As of 2 days ago, I wasn't planning on doing it, but it is an excellent idea. And then this topic presented itself because somebody, one of the kids asked me, why is it that we have that chiyuv? Oh, le'ilay nishmas. We're gonna tonight's shiur is le'ilay nishmas. Yenta bas Rav Nachum Tzvi. Hashem should have an aliyah. What is the reason for that halacha?
The kids ask questions.
Yes. Where does it come from, and what's its purpose and function? Any suggestions? Just want to get a sense of where everybody's holding on this chiyuv. The chiyuv to drink on Purim. Why? There's like 100 reasons given. I'm curious what your take on it is. I've heard over the years many different reasons. So this time I was being pinned down for what I really think the reason is.
All the important things in the Megillah happen about the Mishnah
and okay. So, you know, it's like there's a Rashi that says that's why Dafka Yayin. Because then, and you're not really Yotze with other alcohol, right? It should really be, this is not how we Paschal. You can still. It's a hidur to use yayin, because many of the events of the Megillah take place with yayin. But what's the purpose of what's the chiyuv? The chiyuv is to get drunk, right? Certainly, al pi Shulchan Aruch, Rambam, right? Based on the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch seems to say that the Ramah is the one who cleans things up a little, right? Got that, guys? Ashkenazim, the Ramah. He says, you know, maybe just drink a little more than you used to, sleep, whatever. But I've heard everything. Like, I remember I was once heard from a very liberal Magid Shir that the reason that we get drunk on Purim, the reason it's a chiyuv, is because, as you see, as we'll see in the Megillah in a moment, everybody should try to get a Megillah open now, the Perek Tes. It mentions many deaths, even though these were people that were anti-Semites trying to kill us, and they are the ones that died. Nevertheless, because, you know, political correctness as it is, we feel bad about it, so we get drunk. So I don't know about that one. Anyway, our objective is to somehow get a more sophisticated, deeper understanding. What is the point of getting drunk on Purim? So, because it's... Sorry? What do you mean?
Your relationship and not in Lechaber, have a sense
of that's
sense
good. I like that. Right? We'll see. That's going to connect, I think, where I'm headed with this. We're going to see where that fits in. The idea of maybe a disinhibition to have better relationships with other people. Reus, it's a very significant theme on Purim. That's going to actually be, I think, a part of where I'm headed, but we'll pull it together at the end. So, you know, really, Purim is such a paradoxical holiday. It's such a ironic, confusing holiday for many reasons. On the one hand, we have this important chiyuv of drinking and of suda and partying. It's a real party. When you think of Purim, it's the physical, carnal holiday of partying. That's what it's about. And at the same time, it has incredible mussar to it. Purim is a yontif that has probably, you know, as much as any other, including Yom Kippur, right? Musar, very striking musar that's being presented on the day of Purim in the Megillah and in the Mitzvah Sayom. And it's musar that's for Klal Yisrael as a whole, and there's musar that's directed to the individual. It's everyone's familiar with the famous, the Zohar that the Arizal made famous, right? Yom Kippur is, the objective of Yom Kippur is to be like Purim. Yom Kippurim, right? It's a very famous line. Everybody throws that out. So We have to that's going to be part of our understanding, is going to relate to understanding that line. What does that mean exactly? In what sense is Yom Kippur supposed to be like Purim? What's this element of Purim that we want to emulate on, of all days, the holiest day of the year? Obviously, on the face of it, they're very, very opposite days in every sense. Partying, eating and drinking, fasting, right? Very serious day, Yom Kippur. In what sense is it supposed to try to express itself as Purim? So we have to understand that. So I want to start with some of the Musar. So the Musar begins, or really ends, at the end of the Megillah. If you go to Perek Tes, we're going to raise just a few questions from Perek Tes that we're going to try to answer. And this is the Musar, I think, that I once spoke to the Tuesday night shiur about years ago. I think we once did this little piece. There is in Perek Tes, when finally the letters are out and the battle begins and the Jews are successful and victorious. So we see in towards the end of the parak in Tesvav, Tezayin, Yudzayin, Yudches, Yutes, that first all the Jews were victorious, whether they were in the Prazim in the Areya Prazos or in Shushan, right? And it says in Pasuk Tezayin that first it says in Tesvav, Yikolo Yudim Asher B'Shushan Gam B'Yom Arba Asar L'Chodesh Adar V'Yehargu B'Shushan Shloshem Eos Yish U'Bavizah Lo Shalchus Yadam U'Shar HaYehudim Asher B'Midos HaMelech Nikalu V'Amod Al Nafsham V'Noach Mo'eveyam V'Rog B'Soneyam Chamisha V'Shivim Elef U'Bavizah Lo Shalchus Yadam. There's all those deaths that very liberal Magid Shir was worried about, right? So we see over here that the battle took place on the 13th and v'noach moivayim on the 14th, right? V'yom shlosh asar, I'm in Yudzayin now, v'chodesh adar v'noach ba'arba asar bo, v'asa oso yom mishte v'simcha. So that pasuk tells me the year of that victory, that year when the scattered city Jews defeated their enemies and battled with them on the 13th and then rested on the 14th from the battle. So the time of noach moivayim, right? That's the time when they made, that year, Simcha v'mishte v'simcha. Then, in Yud Ches, we hear what happens in Shushan. V'yudim asher b'shushan, nikalu b'shlosha asar bo, b'arba asar bo. They fought on the 13th and the 14th. V'noach b'chamisha asar bo. V'asa also yom mishte v'simcha. So, in Shushan, the battle went the 13th and the 14th, and Noach was on the 15th. So, that year, they made Yom Simcha V'Mishta. Good. Or Mishta V'Simcha. Then in Pasuk Yutes, the parallel ends. Right? Up till now, we had both in Shushan and outside of Shushan a victory, and then when they were Noach, they made a party. In Yutes, we find out, well, what happened after that? What about in subsequent years? Al-Kena Yehudim Prazim Hayoshvim Ba'areya Prazos Osim is Yom Arbasa L'Chodesh Adar Simcha U'Mishte V'Yom Tov U'Mishloch Manos Ish L'Reim. So what happens in Yutes? We hear that subsequently for Doros, only the Prazos, only the scattered cities, the non-walled cities, only those people established a Yom Tiv L'Doros. And it wasn't just like a Purim day like we have, but the original attempt was to establish a Yom Simcha U'Mishte V'Yom Tov U'Mishloach Manos. Mamish Yom Tov. They tried to make it into a real Yom Tov. Comes along Pasuk Chaf. Mordechai seems not to be very happy with that attempt. V'yichtov Mordechai Sadarim Ha'Ela V'Yishlach Svarim El Kol HaYehudim Asher B'chol Medinos HaMelech Hashverosh HaKrovim V'Rechokim. He sends out, in response to that attempt to make for the Prazos, this Yom Tov, he sends out letters to all the Jews all over the place to do what? L'kayim aleim lios osim is Yom Arba Asar l'chodesh Adar, to make the 14th, the Es Yom Chamisha Asar, and the 15th, b'chol shana v'shana. And what would this day be like on the 14th and on the 15th? So right away it's different because the Prazot, they only wanted the 14th, one day, a Yom Tov. Mordechai sends back, no, that's not what we're going to do. scratch your plan. I'm telling you what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do. 14th and 15th, Kayamim asher nachu b'ayim ha'yehudim mo'ayveyam, v'chodesh she'nefach lehem miyagan l'simcha, u'me'evel yom tov, l'asos osam yemei mishta v'simcha, mishloach manos ish l'reyehu, u'matanos l'avyonim. There's like three major differences in his plan. What are they? Yom tov is out. No yom tov. Why? That's question number one. Matanos l'avyonim is added. Why? Anything else? 15th, and instead of only the 14th. Good. One more thing, the one everybody misses. Look back at the pasuk. What did he change? It went from simcha u'mishta to mishta u'simcha. So I'm about to give you an answer to all those questions, except for the last one. The last one is the, I call it the orphan question. Everybody always seems to skip it, right? And the classic answer to the first three questions, it doesn't answer it. So what's the classic answer? So
when you say Mordechai wasn't happy, what wasn't happy with?
Something he wasn't happy with, because he changed the whole plan, right? The original plan...
Happy with the ones in the world cities not making a yontif at all.
Could be.
What
do you think he should be unhappy with?
The fact
that they want to do a yom of shevach and hodayah for the victory, that's very appropriate. That should have been a good idea. What about, let's start with the first one. The fact that they wanted to make a yontif. Are they allowed to make a yom tov? Post chumash, are you allowed to establish a yontif? No. Ein navi rashai l'chadish davar ma'atam. You can't have new yom tov. You can't do it. Except, how do we paskin? Is this really 100% true? Can you ever make a yontif? You can, on a private level. You can't make a yontif for the klal. You can make a yontif for the private, and there have been people that have done it, and cities that have done it, right? There's a Magen Avraham. It's a famous Magen Avraham, and the whole discussion about this in the Shulchan Aruch, but you can't make a public one. What were they trying to do? Private one or a public one?
Public
would mean Klal Yisrael.
Yeah, they were doing somewhere in between.
So take a look. Let's start with this. Take a look at the handout on the top page. So the very first thing in the upper right-hand corner is a Gemara from Megillah. It's Beis Amud Beis. Most people get this far when they take out Megillah, right? Most people get to Beis Amud Beis. So the Gemara over here ask the following question. The Mishnah had just said, right? The Mishnah tells me, Megillah Nikreis B'Yirav, Yubez Yigimim Yudat Hizvav, etc. Right? Tells me all that, the whole derivation of all those days. And it also mentions, by the way, that the baseline is like the 14th for the unwalled cities and the 15th for the walled cities from the times of Yoshua. So the Gemara over here wants to know, Minani Mile, where do we know that you're supposed to have Kriyas Megillah and all the rest, presumably, on the 14th as well as the 15th. Where do we know on the 15th, right? We just saw the Pesukim, right? What kind of question is this? The Pasuk says, L'kayim aleim liyos osim is yom arba asar l'chodesh adar, vis yom chamisha asar b'chol shana v'shana. What kind of question is the Gemara asking? Minani mile, it says it feirish in the Megillah, right? So look what the Gemara says. Amar Rava, damar kra, alkena yudim aprazim, ayoshim barei aprazos, v'chule. He quotes the original Pasuk. He quotes the Pasuk Yotes. He says, since it says over there, the Yehudim Aprazim, right, they're going to be celebrating on the 14th from that Pasuk. Process of elimination, right? What was the real kasha of the Gemara is? How do we know the 15th is for the walled cities? So process of elimination. If the 14th was those prazos based on that Pasuk, so Mistama, the 15th, is going to be for the Mukafin Choma. So the Gemara asked the following question, which seems very odd, and what I wanted to focus on. The Ema Prazim Bar Basar and Mukafin Klal Klal Lo. Why learn it that way? Why not assume what it really means is the Prazim, they should do it on the 14th, but the walled cities, forget it. Don't do it at all. So the Gemara's reaction is, what, are you crazy? Look at the Gemara's reaction. It's, the Lav Yisrael Ninu, they're not Jews? And then the Gemara goes further and works this whole dilemma out and extrapolates why the walled city is on the 15th and the unwalled city is on the 14th. But what I wanted to focus on was the havamin of the makshin. What kind of question is this? What kind of entertaining is it that, oh, well, some people will do it and some people won't? Right? What was the havamin? So to answer that, plus all the other questions, so the well-traveled answer is based on the Ramban's answer to a question that's posed by the Ran in the very opening part of the Masechta. And he asks the following question. He says, what kind of business is this altogether? Suddenly we have a mitzvah where there's a kiyum for some people on the 14th and a kiyum for some people on the 15th. That's not the way the Torah likes to work, right? You could see throughout history with the development of the Rambam's Yad Chazako, development of Shulchan Aruch, there's always a concern and an emphasis on Torah Achas and Mishpat Echad. We always want to make it unified. One single approach for all Jews. Suddenly we're establishing on Sheknes HaGdolah, establishing something from the get-go to be divided. Why? So the Ramban gave the following answer, which is significant Musar, that also answers up all our kashas and makes sense of what's going on in the Megillah and in this Gemara over here as well. And the Ramban says the following. He says, what happened? Why was it that originally only the Arei HaPrazos wanted to make a Yontif? So the Ramban explains, and it's in that sheet if you want to look at it inside, he explains, well, the issue was like this. There was a tremendous pachad that existed for the Jewish people during this time. Everyone knew that the 13th was the big day. He peeled poor, and everyone knew about the letters. They were letter, without getting into all the details, the Malbim has a beautiful description of exactly the details of the two letters that went out. Bottom line was, it was known that the 13th was going to be a disaster day where there was going to be big trouble for the Jewish people. The people that lived in the scattered outlying areas, the Arei HaPrazos, were extremely frightened. They were the most scared. The people that lived within Shushan and the walled cities, they assumed, having this happen right after already Haman was out, right? Remember, the letters get opened and all this happens. People lose sight of it. After Haman was already hung and all that was going on and Mordechai was moved up. So they imagined the people in Shushan, in those cities, were in pretty good shape. We got Mordechai being held up in high esteem. We have the king's guards that are going to protect us, even though these letters are out there. So the Ramban says there was a completely different experience of pachad by the walled city people and the unwalled city people. And it's because of that, that the unwalled city people, the Prazos, they were inspired after their Yeshua to establish this should be a Yontif L'Doros. The walled cities, okay, look, they celebrated that year, right? There was a Yeshua. Immediately at the time of the Yeshua, they made Mishta V'Simcha, but there was no need to go further. So it comes along the Ramban and he says, Mordechai said, whoa, that's terrible. Who were they mad at, Larry? Who was Mordechai mad at? The walled cities. He said, so you guys weren't papachad, but they were, so that's, you're not part of Klal Yisrael, right? The Havamin in the Gemara was along the same lines. Like, maybe, you know, the 15th, they don't really have to do it. But hello, Yisrael, Ninu? Is it really true that one Jew will ignore the fact that another Jew was bepachad and was in such mortal terror and danger? It's an incredible musr right here that Mordechai is teaching Klal Yisrael. To really push it through, he says, number one, for the Doros, we're going to remember this. So there's going to be a 14th and a 15th. For what purpose? To absolutely emphasize this mistake that was made by the 15th people. Number two, we're going to throw in Matanos Levyonim, because you don't seem to understand. Being a Jew is being part of Klal Yisrael. It means caring about every other Jew. So that's why it's so significant. It's among the other reasons why Reus and Matanos Levyonim are such a significant part of the whole Yontif. And he then establishes that that's going to be L'Doros. Yontif is out because originally what was going on? It was only a private Yontif. It was mutter for them to do it, right? Because it was only going to be the Arei HaPrazos. It wasn't Klal Yisrael's din, the original Yontif. So they could make a Yontif. It was mutter. But now that it's really, forget that, this is for Klal Yisrael, Now they can't do it. It's a Klal Yisrael Yontiv, so it can't really be a Yontiv, but it's going to remain as just a Yom Mishta V'Simcha. So all this is nice, and it answers every single question, except for one. What's the point of going from Simcha U'Mishta to Mishta V'Simcha? That's the one we need to still answer. Kabbalah Satorah. Right. Some people explain, right? Some people explain the Mishnah Berurah's question, the Levush's question. Why is it that by Hanukkah we don't have Suda and all the celebration, but by Purim we do? So the Levush says, well, physical salvation, spiritual salvation. And others say, no, the whole thing is because it's like a Siyum Suda for Legamro Shel Torah. It's because Kimu V'Kiblu, so that's what the Suda is about. That's an approach to it. But it's not going to establish a Yantif, right? Kimu V'Kiblu, so we'll have a, right? Mikan She, you know, Osim Suda Legamro Shel Torah. Like a few weeks ago, we read in the Torah, V'Yechzu Salokim, V'Yochlu V'Yishtu. So the Ramban learns there was the primary source for this idea that every time there's a Gomer Shel Torah, Kabbalah Satorah, that's what they were doing, eating and drinking, we have a Suda and we have a celebration. But it's a different halacha. It's halacha in Siyum. Siyum in the Gomer Shel, an Inyan Shel Torah. But here they were going to make a Yantif because this was the Yeshua of their types of cities, of their situation, private sort of situation, so they can make a Yantif. Once it becomes, you know, that's not the idea. That's not how we're doing it. Mordechai says this is going to be Klal Yisrael's celebration because we all cared about each other. And even if we were, let's say, living here like, you know, during the time of the Holocaust, but they were suffering over there, it didn't mean we weren't suffering with them, right? And even though we're living here and they're being bombed in Sderot, et cetera, we're feeling it and all the travail that goes on. It's that type of Musar. We have to come back to Mishta V'Simcha V'Simcha V'Mishta. What are the mitzvahs of Purim? Somebody voluntarily. Right. And what else? What's the opening question that we're talking about? Right? So you mentioned all those. Which are in the Megillah? What's the source for those halachas? So, Kriyas Megillah, that's in the Megillah. Right? Matanah, we just read it, right? Where is Kriyas Megillah in the Megillah? Who's learned Masechet Megillah? Guys, right? When the Megillah uses the expression Lizkor, right? Asiya is the other mitzvos, and Zechira is Kriyas Megillah. Right? That's the opening pages of Megillah. All right, we'll get back to that Masechet, but. Which are not in the Megillah? You said five mitzvos. We found Kriyas Megillah, we found Matanos Avyonim and Mishloach Manos. What have we not found? Okay, well, whatever Mishta V'Simcha is, okay, but you said Suda and Chayv Inishal B'Sumi B'Praya, right? So take a look at the handout. On Daf Hayamud Beis. It's okay. Likely story. Wow, 10 minutes left. Megillah Hey Amud Beis. The Gemara asks the following question, or makes the following statement. Tani Rav Yosef, Simcha U'Mishta V'Yom Tov. What does Simcha U'Mishta V'Yom Tov really mean? We just alluded to the fact that Simcha V'Mishta might mean Su'uda and Chai V'Nish L'Besume, right? Let's see if the Gemara agrees with us. What does the Gemara say? The Gemara says, Simcha U'Mishta V'Yom Tov, Milamed, what? The following. Simcha melamed sha'asurim behesped. Mishta melamed sha'asur betanis. V'yom tov melamed sha'asur besiyas melacha. That was the original Yud Tes pasuk. Comes along the word and it concludes, hesped betanis kiblu, melacha lo kiblu. Right? So the yontov was out, but we left with mishta v'simcha. What is mishta v'simcha? Have anything to do with the suda? Have anything to do with chayv inish l'psume? No. Mishta v'simcha, according to the Gemara and according to all the Mishnayos, Pashut Pshat is Isser Hesped, and Isser Tanis. Nothing about those other mitzvahs.
Why don't you say, like, I mean, it's not Yom Tov, but Simchas Yom Tov is what?
Simchas Yom Tov is what?
Yeah.
Good question. Good question. All right, well, hang on. We're going to get to exactly what is Simchas Yom Tov in a second. But for the moment, I want to just emphasize the fact that if you learn this Masechta well, you will conclude that Suda and drinking are not part of the Karim in the original Psukim that developed the Mitzvah of Purim. They weren't there. It's just clearly not what Simcha and Mishta mean. The Gemara is Mefurish that way. And there are many Rayos. The one, Rav Sternbach and Modim Zmanim, develops this idea very, very fully and shows Raya after Raya that this is true. But then again, if you look at the bottom of the handout from Zion, that's the Gemara on Zion, it's clear that Rava said, Mechayev Inish the Besume Bepuraya, Adlo Yada Ben Ara Haman the Baruch Mordechai. And a second statement of Rava, Seudas Purim Sha'achla Balaila Lo Yotze Yidei Chavasa. If Seudas Laila Lo Yotze Yidei Chavasa, what does that imply about Seudas Yom? You are Yotze Yidei Chavasa, and that it is a Chiyuv, right? So clearly there's a Chiyuv Suda, and there's a Chiyuv Inish Lebesume Bepuraya. So where's that coming from? So Rav Sternbach develops the idea, which is clear as day when you really look through the sugyas, that he's right, that there was a separate takana, right? Originally, the suda and the drinking were not part of the takana Purim. It was an Isser Hesped and an Isser Tanis. And later it developed that there's this new idea, new takanas Rabbanan, to have a suda and libesume. So why? What's its purpose? So now tell me, Simcha. Its purpose is to fulfill Simcha. We have a Chi of Simcha, right? So the Ikar Din, all you got to do is don't do Hespedim and don't be involved in Atanas. But if you want to like really be Mekayim the Mitzvah to its fullest, enhance your Simcha. So what's a good way to do it? Suda. We're all B'Sameach, B'Simcha now, right? We don't have the wine and the drink, but that certainly would enhance our Simcha, right? So perhaps that's all it is. Why Chayiv Inish L'B'Sumim B'Pariah? Simple, to enhance our Simcha. How true is that? So take a look at page 2.
Maybe that's why.
What?
Maybe that's why it's with the order. Simcha is more individual, and Mishka is more communal.
Well, That's interesting. I mean, it could be something like that. I'm going a different direction, but that's interesting. Could be. It fits with the Prati Klali transfer in the other sense. That's very good. I'm getting at something else. I think the Simcha Mishnah is getting at something much more musardic, much more profound. It's interesting, right. Right. So what was it? What's the implication? The implication there is the following. No, the way I would, that's a good question. And the way I would answer it, even though I haven't explained where the Suda comes from yet, but I will in a minute. But I would say that the essential, the fundamental expression that was being looked for was the Shalach Manos, right? That was the original idea. Then when the new Takan of Suda came in, it was incorporated to be and work very well, according to the Rambam. It's a Machlokas, famous Manos HaLevi versus the Rambam. What is Shalach Manos? Is it really part of the Suda? That's the Rambam's presentation. The Manos HaLevi says, no, it has nothing to do with the Suda. It's pure Reus. It's an expression of Reus. In fact, we could be Yotze. Here's the famous Nafkamina. I give it to you. You don't take it. You give it back to me. We're Yotze Shalach Manos. Really? Did I enhance your Suda too much? Not really. But I showed Reus. So the Manos HaLevi says, you're Yotze. The Rambam says, you're not Yotze anything. Right? So, right. No, that's another Nafkamina. What exactly it has to be. There are other nafkaminas between these two ways of looking at Shalach Manos. Rabbi Tzalev Rudinsky, a few years ago, it was more than a few years ago now, it's like 10 years ago, he came to Teaneck, he gave a fantastic shiur on Purim. And in that shiur, I remember, just like he showed that the origins of many of the lachos of Purim are reus, this idea of reus, all stemming back to the real purpose of Purim, which is to eradicate a malek, right? That's what we want to do. And the how do you eradicate a malek? Through reus. Why? Because the origins of a malek were harchaka, right? Where does Amalek come from, right? Timna, who was pushed away by Avram and Yitzchak, right? You're not going to be part of our family. So she ran and she went to Eliphaz. And then came out Amalek. It was Harchaka. And we have to learn about Kiruv. And that was a beautiful idea. And he just talked for 2 hours with incredible rise. It was just an amazing shir. But that's Shalach Manos. And that was really, you could see, even with our theme that we're developing, Reyos is going to be part of it. But I want to get back to Chai Vinish, the B'Zumi B'Pariah. I want to understand it. This is such a weird halacha. It's crazy. And it causes so much trouble. So, but it's done by Gedolei Yisrael. So what is it? So I entertain the possibility. Maybe it's a simple enhancer and that's it. But you look at the Rambam and you get the clear notion that the Rambam's perception of Simcha, the furthest thing from it would be Libsumi at any time. Look what he says in Perek Vav Halacha Chaf on the bottom. Above in Yud Zayin, he tells me that there's a chi of Simcha on Yantiv. Good. Then he tells me the following. Kesha'adam ochel v'shose v'sameach b'regel lo yimshach b'yayin u'bischok u'bekalus rosh. All the ingredients of Purim, right? V'yomer shekol mi sheyosef b'zeh yirbe b'mitzvah simcha. And you think, the more you drink and the more you do all that stuff, that's going to be a great kiyum of simcha. He says that anything is further, nothing could be further from the truth. Shehashichrus v'haschok harbe v'kalus harosh eina simcha ela hololus v'sichlus v'lo nitztavinu ala hololus v'sichlus ela simcha sheyish ba avodas yotzer hakol sheneemar tachas asher lo avadat Hashem Elokecha b'simcha u'b'tov lev. Ha'lamadata she'avoda b'simcha v'yefshar la'avodas Hashem lo mitoch schok v'lo mitoch kalus rosh v'lo mitoch shichrus. So clearly, the function here could not be to enhance my simcha. The Rambam is very explicit that yayin and being marbe b'yayin and being mashachar by yayin is the quickest way to remove yourself from true simcha. So, what else could it be? So maybe yantav is a different simcha than the simcha we're supposed to have over here? Could be. Could be. But I think there's another idea. We're going to go outside now, since we're at the 1 minute, and we have about, we've only gotten halfway through this year. But I'll go into overdrive now. There's an amazing Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara in Bava Metzia, you have it over here, it's on Daf Chaf Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara says that it's talking about, it's Eilam Metzius, so it's talking about returning objects. So one of the issues is there's a discussion about you could return an object. You have to return an object to a Talmud Chacham, even if there's no simanim, just based on tfiyas ayin, recognition. We trust Talmidei Chachamim, even without real simanim, just if they say they recognize their item. So the Gemara gets into a little bit of the trustworthiness of the Talmud Chacham, where it comes from, how far does it go? And it concludes with the following very interesting statement. The Gemara says, there are three areas, right? Plus mile avidi rabbanon dimishanu b'milayhu. There are three areas where they're allowed to kind of speak falsehood, to stretch the truth. What are the three areas? Right? This is a very famous Gemara. B'masechta, b'puraya, u'be'ushpiza. What are those three areas? So masechta means in their learning. Somebody comes over and wants to see, you know, where are you holding? Right? It's a common thing that goes on. Let's see what this guy's made of. So, you know Bava Metzia, huh? So you're allowed to say, even though you know it cold backwards and forwards, so you're allowed to be modest and say, and Mishum, just for modesty reasons, oh, I don't know that one, right? That's one area, the Masechta. Another one is, the last one is Ushpiza. What is that? You were at somebody's house. They were the most amazing host in the world. They treated you great. Someone comes over, hey, how was it at that guy's house? So you're allowed to say, oh, it was horrible. You didn't treat me well. Why? Because you don't want him like flooded, right? We can, I see interesting application for this, right? In light of, seems like you get a reputation for being a certain way with the Meshulachim, and before you know it, right, they're pouring in. So that's what the Gemara means over there. You can like say, he's not such a great host, in order to protect him from everybody suddenly wanting to like go over to that guy's house. And then the third one is Bipuraya. So what's that? If you look at Rashi, Rashi says it's talking about Meloshon Pruravu, that it's like a personal question about a person's private life. So Mishum Tznius, you're allowed to, like, you know, is your wife going to the mikveh tonight? I don't know what you're talking about, right? You know, you're allowed to evade the question. You don't have to answer honestly to something like that. It's totally not Tzniistic. It's disgusting for somebody to be asking that question. So that's Rashi's take on it. Comes along the Marsha and he says, that's not what it's talking about. It has nothing to do with that. And the Tosfos also gives a pshat like Rashi. It's interesting. The takes the Marsha. He comes along and he says, pariah. Doesn't that sound familiar? Chai v'nish l'besumi v'pariah da'adil yadav ben Aram Haman Baruch Mordechai. That's what it's talking about. New and what? What's where's the lie? What's the Talmud Chacham saying? So, what? Right. So it says, here's an area where if they, you really know, yada, you know the difference between Mordechai and Haman, but you're allowed to say, lo yada. Why? I understand Sneas. I understand protecting the good host. That's very reasonable. I understand all of it. I don't understand, and being modest about what you're learning, that's also a good midah. What's the point about doing this? Why are you lying? Why are you telling the guy comes over to you, you act drunk? You act like you lo yada bin Haman and Baruch Mordechai, while in fact you know very well that you know it. Why would it be that it would ever be laudable for a person to sort of project incorrectly about what they really know deep inside to be true? Strange Gemara. Strange Pshat.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, beautiful. Let's develop it a little more. Develop it a little more. I need to indulge a little more time. Bli Neder, I'll never do this again. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein had another beautiful Musar message at the beginning of the Megillah. Right? This is the personal message he felt of the Megillah. Right? There's a definite klal message. Right? Megillah means to be megala, what is benista, right? In other words, there's so many things going on in the Megillah that we don't know until we read the whole Megillah, and then it's revealed that all this teva was really beyond Hashem, and the whole thing works out. That's the famous chap on the word Megillah. So Rav Aaron says that's one very important aspect of the Megillah, but there's a very personal one that doesn't involve Klal Yisrael, but it's a personal message to each and every individual, and that's the story of Esther. As a person, right? If you look in the Gemara Megillah on Daf Zayin, over there it talks about how the Megillah became established as part of Tanakh. Esther goes to Chazal and she says, "Kavuni ledoros." What do those words mean? What does it mean, "Kavuni ledoros"? That's what we understand pshat to be, but that's not at all what the word means. "Kavuni" means me. Bikoveya me, Esther, as a person, Ladoros. That's the starting point for Rav Aaron's discussion, which is very mduyak. Because he says, take a look at what Esther is all about in the Megillah. It's an amazing thing. In Perek Beis, we first get introduced to Esther. Who is she? Pasuk Zayin. Excuse me. Perek Aleph, Pasuk Zayin. Vayihi omen es hadasa, hi Esther bas dodo, ki en la'av ve'em. Right? The most avia v'imala Mordechai lo levas. She's an orphan. She's like a nebuch. She's adopted by her uncle. We don't hear much about her again until a few psukim later when the whole thing starts with Vashti's out and they're looking for someone else to come in. So we see her development. What do we learn about her? In Pasuk Tesvav, Ubeagia Torah Esther bas Avichael dod Mordechai she lakach lo levas lavo el hamelach lo biksha davar. Everybody else is asking for all this fancy stuff to get all beautified and made up nicely. She's not asking for anything. Ki im es asher yomar hegai saris hamelach shomer anashim. Only what she's told by the person who's in charge in the area where all these women were kept. Tezayin v'tilakach Esther el hamelach. She doesn't. Everything is passive. Everything about Esther in every pasuk, if you pay careful attention, in Perek Beis, depicts a person who is a quiet wallflower, passive, nebuchal person who doesn't say a word. Ein Esther Magedes Moladetav Esamah Kasher Tzival Le Mordechai. She doesn't think for herself. She's not capable of any independent thought. Everything she does, the pasuk goes out of its way. If you once you're onto this, you see it over and over again. Pasuk after pasuk goes out of its way to say she's doing this because somebody told her to do it. It's either going to be Haggai, Mordechai, but she doesn't think for herself at all. The es mama Mordechai Esther osa kasher isa bim noito. She then gets picked. Here she is, this passive nothing, never thinking for herself, totally dependent on everybody else. She's in the palace. What's going on? Mordechai finds out about the plan, and he wants to warn her and get her to get involved and in her position as the queen, help Klal Yisrael. So he comes how? Bilvush Sak, right? He's out there in the courtyard. He's sending a message. What's her reaction? Vatavona naros Esther, vayagidula. What's going on? She's embarrassed out of her mind. What's going on? Mordechai, look what you look like. You're coming into the king's palace. Look like that. She's not interested in his message. She's just interested in the appearance and the embarrassment of the situation. She gets him dressed. But he's not taking that. Don't you get it, Esther? I'm sending you a message. Vatikra Esther latach. To find out what's going on, she sends out a messenger. The messenger hears the whole story from Mordechai. She comes back. The messenger comes back to tell Mordechai's message to Esther. What's her reaction? I can't go to the king. What are you, crazy? So finally Mordechai has it. Esther, you really don't get it. And in what I think is the absolute turning point of the Megillah in terms of the personal message, Sukim Yud Gimel and Yudalad. But Yomer Mordechai Lashiv El Esther, Al Tidami Bin Avsheikh, Limalait Besamelch Mikola Yudim, Ki Im Hacharesh Tacharishi Ba'is Azos, Revach Vatzala Yamoda Yudim Mimakom Acher, Va'at Ubesavich Tovedu, Umi Yudea Im Le'is Kazos, Higatel Machus. Comes along Mordechai and says, you are absolutely missing the point of your entire life. This moment is your moment to find out who you really are. And I want you to know that whether you get involved or not, the salvation is going to happen. The Jewish people will be saved. That's a davar yadua. This is the story of you, Esther, and it's your moment to discover yourself and become yourself. And he gives what is probably amongst the most powerful Musar lines in Tanakh in those two psukim. What's her reaction? Within a pasuk, suddenly, Vatomer Esther Lashiv El Mordechai, Lech Knosos Kol Yehudim, Ani Mitzim B'Shushan B'Tzumu Alai. She comes up with a plan. She takes over the little wallflower who didn't say a word, who was nothing, didn't do anything independently, becomes a transformed being. The true Esther that would then, for the rest of the Megillah, lead the way, is presented. She had a moment of transformation. I remember... All right, I have a personal story that illustrates the same concept that I'm going to say for another time. Sure. I had a moment where, all right, I'll share the personal story. When I was in, you can hear this. I'm debating it a little. When I was in college, I would say it was a very tumultuous time in my life. Before I went to Eretz Yisrael, I was grappling with everything. You know that period of life, right, guys? So I had these fantastic roommates. This was Siyata Dishmaya. I was put in a dorm room with 8 guys, all of them fresh back from Eretz Yisrael. 3 guys in Gush, 3 years in Gush, 2 years in Shalavim, this guy in KBY. The whole gamut. I had it all. Each one of them was like all over me. I was the Kiruv project for the dorm room. And there was one guy who, I won't mention his name because he happened to have lived in Teaneck for a little while. So I'm forever grateful to him. He insisted on taking me. He went to MHS. And he went to a shir by Rabbi Yitzchak Adler. Anyone familiar with him? He was Michael Rosenzweig's former chavrusa. Tremendous Talmud Chacham, unbelievable. The book Lamdus, I don't know if you're familiar with it. Whatever, amazing person. He was giving shir to these guys on a very, very high level, right? And I said to him, I won't know what's flying. You're going to take me to the shir, it's going to be like Greek. Why are you doing this? He said, just trust me, you'll love the shir. So he takes me to the shir, and I sit down there, and I'm looking at all these guys, very serious guys, everybody's like holding. And I'm there, and I'm wondering, why am I here? Suddenly, the Maggid Shir, never met me before in his life, he puts down the Gemara, and he says, all right, everybody close your Gemaras, we're going to do Musar today. Okay, everyone got all excited, it seemed. I guess every now and then they needed a little Musar. And he says, we're going to talk about one Gemara that's in Shabbos, and Daf Lamed Aleph. It's the famous Gemara about what happens when a person goes to Shamayim for Din V'cheshbon. Right? Everyone familiar with that Gemara? The questions, were you Kovea Itim? Were you Sipita Yeshua? All those lines. And he said, I want to ask a question on this Gemara. He says, the Gemara seems to give a Seder to the questions, as though there's a significance to the order that they're presented. He says, what? You know, we're in Shamayim. There's no time. We're above time and space. Who cares about the Seder? What's the significance that there's an order to the questions? So he says, I'll give you pshat. He says, everyone in their life comes to a pivotal moment, or more than once, where they have to make a significant decision that entails finding out, at first, who they really are, discovering themselves. And then let me give you an example. And he starts to give over my biography, basically. Right there, to my amazement, I'm sitting there, you know, being too stupid to figure out what really happened. He, Mamish, is describing my life, you know, up to that moment, and the decisions that I was grappling with, right? And, you know, I started crying, practically, when he was doing it, because I thought it was like a miracle from Shamayim that it just happened to be the day that I came, this guy's giving Musar about me. What really happened, obviously, I later found out, was my good friend arranged the whole thing. You know, told him all about me, told him I was coming, arranged the whole thing, which was a brilliant idea. And it worked, and I fell for it hook, line, and sinker. Within a year, I would say within a few weeks, I was planning my year in Shalavim and, like, changed my life. But it was like, what got to me was that with all my grappling, what he finally got me to do was focus on who am I for real? That's the function of Chayev Inish Lubesume Beparaya Adilo Yada. That's what it's meant to do. If you look at the last page on your own time, because we're not going to read it, Rav Sternbach develops this idea also in a different context, to the point that he says, Purim, the expression he uses, Eis Mivchan Hu. Purim is the day of the test. A person, whoever they really are, is affected by many distractions and many temptations and many fears. And a person's intellect, his yeda, is what prevents him from really being himself. Chayv inish lebesumi v'choraya atel yada is very, very meduyak. You are chayv to drink for the purpose of removing the yeda to find out when that inhibition, that intellectual inhibition, there's a part of our brains, biologically this is 100% true, there is a part of our brains whose job is to inhibit us from doing socially inappropriate things, right? So that, Rachman al-Islam, when someone has a stroke, it's almost funny, but it's incredibly tragic. Because I've seen people with a stroke, if someone has a stroke at this part of the brain, they are normal in every way, except that they're totally disinhibited. They will tell you what you really look like, right? They'll just lay it out on the line. There is no inhibition. The purpose of the yayin on Purim is to do that as well. So, now, how does that work out? So, if you are on the madrega of these gedolim that are doing it, what will come out? The real you. What will the real you be like? It'll be great. I want to just read these lines to really express this as well as Rav Sternbach. He says the following. Hasechel sholet ba'adam, v'yachol yisater ba'amke levavav omek ritzono. A person's seichel is able to rule and hide within a person who they really are and what their real ratzon is. Uba'ona kazos yecholim lahakir etzem mihuta. But when you remove that seichel, then you can find out what the person is really like. The objective is that what you should find out is that between Aror Haman and Baruch Mordechai, you don't know in the sense of yeda that's external. But when it's removed and the real you is revealed, you absolutely do know the difference between Baruch Mordechai and Aror Haman. It's the same, that the facade is removed and the true you is out, and it's the same. In that sense, the goal of Yom Kippur is to do the same thing without the wine. On Yom Kippur, we're supposed to really delve deep inside ourselves, remove all the external, false, phony, ungenuine parts of who we think we are as Jews, and we're supposed to have come out the truth and let it be that it is somebody that is an Oved Hashem. On Yom Kippur, it's very easy to do, because ultimately everything there, the whole build-up from Elul, generates these fine qualities in a person to come to the surface. On Purim, it's not so pashut. And on Purim, the objective is for a person, right, as he puts in the last lines, ube'eis simchas Purim kishe yizkor ha-Torah, if a person while he's drunk is still being remembering the Torah, siman she'ahavasa k'shura b'nafsha, u'kishehu shochecha b'yemei mishteh v'simcha, it's a siman she'eino oev ha-Torah v'eino sameach ba. If you lose it, if you become just an animal on Purim when you get drunk, then you're finding out something about yourself. It's the day of Mivchan. One way or the other, Chai V'nish L'Besumi B'Pariah is just like Esther found out who she was and ran with it. The function of the drunkenness, so to speak, on Purim is for each one of us to find out the same. You should hope that when you find out, it's something that's very pleasant. I remember a Purim I spent with Rosh Yeshiva, we'll end with this, and I saw this in living color. This Rosh Yeshiva got smashed beyond imagination. He was a person, when he's not drunk, very shy, right? Very, very inhibited. It affected something. I always wonder, you know, like, Hachnasas Orchim, how much is he inviting people over? Not much. Why? I didn't understand why, but on Purim I found out. Because as soon as he became disinhibited, the reus in him came flying out. He invited 30 people over for, you know, successive Shabbosos because he was drunk. But what was that? Because he was just not b'seichel? No, it was because he was living example of Rav Sternbach's message. The inhibition, the facade was gone, and the true him came out. And it was an amazing kiyum of the true simcha of Purim, which is after a person is able to remove his inhibitions and this seichel that's guarding his real inner self, he should come out and be satisfied with the picture that's painted. That, I think, would be the ultimate simcha, totally satisfying even the Rambam's definition. Stop with that. I'm sorry I went so late. Oh, the Simcha v'Mishta, right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So it's the Mishta that leads to the Simcha.
As opposed to having a Simcha.
Simcha, which was a Simcha. Yeah.